I'm very pleased to welcome out to the stage now Sarah Lloyd. Sarah is a farmer, she's an activist, she's been a political candidate, and she is currently one of the lead organizers of Our Wisconsin Revolution, which is putting on a bunch of Fighting Bob Fest events around the state this weekend. Give a warm welcome to Sarah Lloyd.
Hey. Hello, Fighting Bob Fest kickoff. It's really great to be here. As Norm said, I am the co-chair of Our Wisconsin Revolution. And we are a group of hardy individuals that are taking back the state from the clutches of the grifter class. And we welcome you all to be part of our action. We are organizing and training people across the state from the rural areas to the urban areas to come together to fight for all the things that we value. We are fighting for a $15 minimum wage. We're fighting for clean water and the state that actually protects our water. We are fighting for health care for all. And we are getting money out of politics. And thank you. And one of the things that we are doing is last year and this year, partnering up with the Progressive to continue the long tradition of Fighting Bob Fest. And so Norm mentioned at the beginning of the evening that we've got some events coming up tomorrow and Monday, and I'll tell you about those. But first, I just want to give a little introduction to my connection to the Fighting Bob Fest event. It's really an honor for me to stand here with this picture of Ed Garvey here right below me. Yay, Ed. So my father grew up on a dairy farm in Columbia County in Cambria, and I stumbled back to the Lloyd family farm back in 2001, and I was lucky enough to see a little flyer in my library about a Fighting Bob Fest in Baraboo at the Sauk County Fairgrounds. And so I attended the first Fighting Bob Fest, not really knowing what was going on. And then I was so inspired by all the amazing people that I met there that I volunteered for, I think, every single Fighting Bob Fest but one. I was a volunteer with a lot of you. So raise your hand if you ever volunteered for a Fighting Bob Fest somewhere. I see some of you out there. I used to be in charge of all the tables and booths that were in the commercial building where you could meet all the great organizations that are working around the state for all the things that we care about. And my family, I ended up marrying a dairy farmer over by the Wisconsin Dells, and I joke that I married the last Norwegian bachelor farmer of Columbia County. His name is Nels Nelson. And I'm not making that up. And he is home milking cows right now. And Nels and his family, Don and Anita Nelson, their aunt Joan Christofferson, Hiroshi and Arlene Cano, and their neighbors fought Perrier Nestle when Perrier Nestle came to town and wanted to steal our groundwater and sell it for their profit. And Ed Garvey was the attorney that joined with the group of citizens and fought and drove Nestle out of the state. And with the great success that the citizens had in this David and Goliath story of a group of citizens from rural Columbia, Adams, Marquette County, who fought to protect our water, they said, you know, there's a lot of other citizens around the state that are fighting too, and let's get together and let's recharge our batteries and let's come together in the same actual physical location and have a bit of a party. And it was called Fighting Bob Fest. And so, you know, I really welcome you to, you know, when we would meet after each Fighting Bob Fest, we would say, okay, well, what worked well and what do we need to improve? And we really came to the conclusion that one of the most important things that we could do is get together and recharge our batteries and get inspired for the long slog ahead. And so we're here tonight. And tomorrow, if you're here in Madison, you know, head on down to Bridium Park at 10 o'clock, 10 to 2, bring a picnic lunch, hang out. There'll be music. There'll be people to talk to. And then I'm heading over to La Crosse tomorrow, and I welcome you all to jump in the car. I have a couple spots in my car, so contact me if you need a ride. And from 3 to 7 tomorrow in Cameron Park, in La Crosse, there'll be an event, and it's featuring local speakers, local people that are fighting just like us here. There's a youth panel coming together to talk about getting youth involved in the struggle. And then Monday in Milwaukee, it's really worth a trip over to Milwaukee. There's a live performance by Josh Fox, the documentarian who did Gasland. And that'll be a great event. It's a national tour, so it's really a great, unique event that we get here right in Wisconsin. And it's a Fighting Bob Fest event. So thank you all for being here. Thanks for continuing the struggle and honoring the legacy of Fighting Bob La Follette and honoring the legacy of Ed Garvey. Thank you.
Sarah Lloyd. And, you know, we have no shortage of festivals here in Wisconsin and no shortage of progressive festivals. So I also want to note that in Eau Claire on Saturday, September 22nd, the Eau Claire Wisconsin Grassroots Festival, it's called WisconsinGrassrootsFestival.net on the web, and they have number of speakers. They have 20 different breakout sessions. There's going to be a museum exhibition, a call for peace dance, and so on. It's all on a little flyer that you can find out there in the lobby. In fact, pretty much everything I've been talking about tonight has little flyers that you can find out there in the lobby, which I encourage you to do. Speaking of which, I also want to mention the Capital Times Idea Fest, which is coming up September 28th and 29th. A bunch of great programs. They don't have a flyer yet, but there are copies of the Cap Times out in the lobby, which you can grab, and it's got an announcement in there for the Idea Fest, and it's also on the web at ideafest.org, I think it is. And finally, one other thing, I thanked the Barrymore Theater at the beginning, and I can't thank them enough for opening their doors to all of these wonderful community events. A year ago, on Armistice Day, November 11th, we produced a show here commemorating the anniversary of Armistice Day and taking that notion of the original notion of Armistice Day, of a war to end all wars, and making it current again. And this year, Sean Michael Dargan, who's out there in the audience someplace wearing a straw hat, Sean took our idea and made it even better. So I encourage you to check it out. It's going to be here at the Barrymore Theater, a live rock and roll history show, The Greatest War. And the Progressive will be here. The Madison chapter of Veterans for Peace, named after Clarence Kalin, will be here. And hopefully all of you will be here as well on Sunday, November 11th. 7 p.m. here, this stage. Right now. So I want to mention, I didn't mention earlier, but Jim Hightower, who spoke earlier, of course, is a regular columnist for The Progressive. You can see his writing in The Progressive magazine every issue, which comes out bi-monthly. So I was just reading this morning his column that's going to appear in our October-November issue, and I encourage you to subscribe to get that October-November issue if you haven't already from my previous ask. But Jim Hightower is a regular columnist, and another regular columnist that we have is the wonderful comedian Will Durst. And Will Durst has come all the way out from California to join us tonight. He has roots here in Wisconsin. His family's in the Racine area, and he brings to us a mixture of Wisconsin and California. Give a warm welcome to Will Durst.
Fighting Bob festivals are the best audience in the world. How you guys doing? It's great to be in Madison. I'm from New Berlin, Muskego, West Allis, Waukesha. I had to get out because comedy's illegal in Waukesha. Moved to San Francisco, and it's not the real world, but then again, neither is Madison. I mean, it's artists and rednecks, you know. It's the only place in the world you see a Prius with a gun rack. It's great to be here. My name is Will Durst. I'm a political comic. I aspire to be a satirist, but you say that and people think you have goat legs or something. Okay, people, that was a test joke. And seriously, we're going to have to step up our games at this point. As you might imagine, being a political comic is kind of an ephemeral thing, mercurial, quixotic. It's up and down and left and right and in and out and hot and the whole Katy Perry song. Sometimes there's nothing going on and I'm screwed. But not now. So not now. The most not now in the history of not nows. We are talking DEF CON 4, not now. Not now with chopped nuts, hot fudge, and a maraschino cherry on top. 24-year-old aged in oak barrels, not now. Not now to the power of damn. And I know this guy sucks for the country and the hemisphere and the planet and the solar system and the universe, but for me, pure gold. Fool's gold, perhaps, but gold nonetheless. He has done for political comedy what legalized marijuana did for Cheetos. What quarter sticks of dynamite are to night fishing. Rented ski boots are to high altitude emergency rooms. And I gotta admit, being a bit conflicted, I mean, it's hard, you know, doing jokes about Trump because you feel bad. You feel like a jackal feeding on democracy. This must be what it's like to be a corporate lawyer. And the hardest part about telling jokes about the president is Republicans don't think they're funny. And Democrats don't think they're jokes. That's not funny because it's true. And all my friends are so excited for me because Obama sucked for comedy. There was no scandal at all. He had less friction than rayon pajamas on silk sheets and zero gravity. It was, no matter what you thought of his policies, you had to admire his ability not to get involved in them. Ooh, wrong crowd, okay. But dealing with Trump, everybody's like, oh man, Durst, Trump must be a gift from comedy heaven. Well, yeah, but no, because how do you parody a parody? The 45th president of the United States is Donald Trump. That's the joke. The rest is farce. President Donald Trump, that's like saying Pope Charlie Sheen. The John Goodman swimsuit calendar. Kim Kardashian in a lab coat at the Atomic Energy Commission. And normally, the political comedy landscape is like a horizon punctuated by spikes. But with him, it's all spikes. You can't get a handle. It's like picking a single tree out of a forest, doing 80 on the freeway going past. That one. You can't get any person. It's like punching Jell-O or trying to staple smoke or catching an eel in a butter sculpture wearing oven mitts. That's grammatically clumsy, and I apologize. You wearing the oven mitts, not the eel. Eels don't have hands. Some have little flipper things, you know, like Trump hands. But you know what they say, small hands small understanding of how government works. That's right. And his ideas don't make sense. His response to school shootings, give teachers guns. Does that make any sense? More guns? No. That's like combating concussions with brick walls. Teachers with guns. Well, add an interesting variable to the faculty lounge. Might help parent-teacher conferences resolve a little earlier. But then, you know, everybody's going to want guns. The crossing guards, the cafeteria ladies, the librarians will demand silencers for theirs. Eventually, with everybody else packing, the kids are going to need some heat. I'm going to study hall. Cover me. And his supporters are zombies. There's Trump. Doesn't matter what argument you use, logic, reason, math, science, physics, gravity. It doesn't. He could push an old lady in a wheelchair down three flights of stairs, and his supporters would argue he was giving her a series of chiropractic adjustments. Even if he were caught torching an orphanage, he's just restoring the heat that Obama diverted to illegal aliens. Sorry, that was a little too close to the bone, wasn't it? Yeah. No, I totally understand. I'm going to make adjustments here. Donald Trump is president, and he keeps throwing these bright, shiny objects at us whenever he gets in trouble to distract us, and you know, we're culpable because we have the attention span of high-speed lint. Why, this is one of the most critical junctures in American history. I can't believe... Hey, look, a squirrel! Keeps throwing at us. The hard part, though, is keeping up. There's something every day, every hour. I swear to God, I switch between baseball and the news, and shit happens between batters. This is like watching House of Cards after they recast it with evil clowns. I'm surprised the U.S. Army band doesn't play Hail to the Chief on a calliope. And who I feel sorry for are the network anchors. Have you seen it? They're exhausted. Production assistants running onto the set during the cold open. Wait, there's more. The teleprompters have scars. You know that graphic, breaking news, it broke. Permanently illuminated now. The new ones don't even have off switches. Leave it on. And for me, the hard part, because I live in San Francisco, the hard part is living on the West Coast, because every morning I wake up going, oh, shit, now what? What dogs of war has the Orange Julius let slip today? Because no matter how early I get up, he's had a three-hour head start to light the fuse to Armageddon. Every day without a mushroom cloud is a victory. And speaking of Kim Jong-un, poor little chubby Korean kid is pissed. He lost top position on the prestigious world's wackiest leader with the most peculiar hair list. That's an award that's been in his family for generations. His grandfather, his father. It was his legacy, and Trump took it away. And then they had that summit. We're going to have a summit. It was a win-win situation because Trump got a good photo op out of it, and Kim Jong-un got to leave North Korea and eat. Couldn't believe they had the summit, because 2 months before the summit, they got in a huge fight over whose nuclear button was bigger. That's not hyperbole. One of them actually said, my button is bigger. So I hope when they were in Singapore, they got alone in a room so they could finally measure. Should have gone to the Lawrence Livermore lab and utilized the electron microscope. which is an instrument that specializes in detecting extremely tiny things. Yeah. It's a dick joke, but it's a really, really complicated dick joke. And he's pissing off allies left and right, Mexico, Canada, Great Britain. You know, diplomatically speaking, these are not the tough ones. He went to the UN to lay down his America First policy at the UN, which is like going to a PETA convention and throwing meatballs into the crowd. Veal meatballs while wearing a mink coat with pockets full of goose liver pate. Too much? Because I do that. Okay. And you gotta love Republicans. Ah, he's president, get over it. They're not just whiny winners, they're lousy losers. Get over it, he's president. Oh yeah, like you got over Barack Hussein Obama? What was that, 8 years of claiming he was born in Kenya? Wasn't born in Kenya, he was born in Honolulu in a manger. We all know that. And then he was visited by the three Howleys, who presented him with gold, frankincense, and puka shells from Hilo Hatties. And he's so corrupt, the corruption of the White House is so large, it can be seen from space. Rick Gates testified that he stole from Paul Manafort, and Paul Manafort stole from Trump, who stole from everybody. They're the Russian nesting dolls of crime. Gonna drain the swamp. He is the swamp. He called in his reptile buddies to come pee in the swamp. It's not just larger, it's warmer.
Okay, there's a logic problem with that because reptiles are cold-blooded, so their urine would not. Thanks for giving me. Yeah. No, I really. And then Omarosa. You gotta love Omarosa. Omarosa, she recorded him and then released the tapes. She wrote a book called Unhinged. The next book is going to be called Crackers and Nuts. she did to him. It's the classic example of the student surpassing the master. Pluck the pebble from my, ow, put the knife down, you bitch. She out-trumped Trump. He must be so proud. And he insults everybody, the media, the judiciary, the intelligence community, the media, Congressional Medal of Honor winners, beauty pageant contestants, the Boy Scouts of America, Mexicans, Muslims, women, Muslim women, Mexican Muslims, women who are Mexican-ish. The NFL, the FBI, the CIA, the DEA, the DER, the NPR, the NBC, the NBA, the NSA, the NWA, the TWA, the TSA, the PSA, the PGA, the PTA, the PBA, the PBR. That doesn't work in Wisconsin. Where the hell could I do that, Joe? He insults everybody except Vladimir Putin, which is as suspicious as finding an AK-47 in your CRISPR bin. Did you see their meeting? He still won't admit the Russians hacked. They like, could have been a 400-pound fat guy on a couch. And you hate to see Chris Christie thrown under the bus like that. Can't be too good for the bus either. Sad. And then they had the meeting in Helsinki, and Jesus Christ, he sucked. He made Neville Chamberlain look like a badass. And that was in public. We have no idea what happened. Their 2-hour super secret extra special meeting alone. Maybe they dismissed the interpreters and let nature take its course in a special joint session of the He-Man NATO Haters Club. Maybe they treated themselves to some horizontal refreshments, engaged in a little gland-to-gland combat. Wrong crowd, all right. Hey, I want to thank you, Madison. I want to thank the Progressive for letting me write a column for over 20 years. I'm doing a little one-man show called Durst Case Scenario, and it's just me. And I've abandoned any sort of weenie attempt at being bipartisan. I'm going after him the same way he went after America, with lies and insults. And, yeah. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great Fightin' Bob Festival and keep it going.
Our next speaker probably needs no introduction. I think she started working at the Progressive magazine when she was in high school on Madison's East Side at East High School. But she's been with the magazine for decades, and last year she ran away to Mexico, but then she came back again and was able to get across the wall back to Madison. And let's give a very warm welcome to Ruth Conniff.
Well, it's nice to be back and see you guys, although I have to say it was hard for us to leave. We had a really fantastic year in Mexico, my family and I. And I just want to say thanks to the Barrymore, and what an unbelievable renovation. I haven't been able to sit where you are, but I'm going to do it right after this because I have heard that the seats are unbelievable. And also thanks to Norm for taking care of the Progressive, and thanks to Will Durst, who I recruited as a columnist. I'm very proud of that. We can't remember when it was. It's a little vague. It was somewhere in the 90s. But anyway, I love Durst. I've always found him hilarious, and it's kind of a short straw for me to follow him, especially since the title of my remarks is What I Did on My Summer Vacation. Actually, it's true. Since we have just returned from Mexico, where we spent a whole year away from the 24/7 Trump news cycle, this is something that I recommend, not just as a matter of personal mental health, but also to gain some perspective on the crisis that's consuming our country. Being in Mexico for a while gave us a chance to think about who we are as Americans and Wisconsinites, and what we do to get out of this mess. So here are a few insights for you. First, some good news. Mexicans don't hate us. They are not furious and brooding about the 2016 election. Friends were really, and family members were really worried that we would be the targets of vengeful anger when we moved to Oaxaca, Mexico. And instead, we found that people were incredibly warm and welcoming and kind. On one of the first days of school, one of my daughter's classmates said to her, "Don't worry, our president is an idiot too." And I think part of the reason is that people are really, really nice in Mexico, and part of it is that they were more ready than we were for Donald Trump, I think, as the supreme ugly American in charge. An aggressively obnoxious white guy with a fake tan and orange hair who speaks slowly and loudly. I think Mexicans have seen this movie before. It's called Spring Break. So in general, Mexicans know a lot more about us than we know about them. They know our music, our movies, our TV shows, our products. Nearly everybody has a relative here. They know that our two countries' economies are deeply intertwined and interdependent. And we, on the other hand, are a bunch of ignorant drunks. But that is okay, because like people in a lot of countries that have suffered under intensely corrupt, repressive regimes, Mexican people understand that the people are not the same as the government, and that a majority here might not even have voted for our government. And they're very gracious and generous and willing to give us ordinary citizens the benefit of the doubt, for which we were very grateful. Which leads me to more good news. The Mexican national elections. We were there for that. Mexico proved that there is a point at which a corrupt, repressive government can no longer bribe, threaten, and steal elections from all of the people all of the time. And we can take heart here in the Banana Republic of America from the Mexican people's complete overthrow of the long-serving, deeply corrupt Institutional Revolutionary Party. It was amazing to watch that. The new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO as he's often called, not only won the election running away, his Morena party swept state, national, and municipal offices in the face of deeply entrenched power and dirty politics practiced by real professionals. I got to be an election observer in Puebla on election day, and I got to see firsthand what it took to overcome the power of the PRI, Mexico's ruling party. I saw attempted vote buying, voter intimidation, the theft of ballot boxes, and I just missed seeing a polling place that I had visited where a team of international observers, where some men came in and shot the place up before literally seizing the ballot boxes, hauling them away, and setting them on fire. I watched a poll worker flagrantly deny ballots to a voter in what turned out to be a systemic effort to falsify election results. And I got to witness guys in sunglasses at the polls with cash in hand passing out pre-marked ballots. So I am here to report to you that things are really bad here, but they are not that bad. We really don't have an excuse to despair. We can do this. It's very hopeful to see people grab hold of the levers of democracy and take their country back. And that is what we need to do here. We need to overthrow the corrupt oligarchy that is running our state into the ground and take back our country from the aspiring tin pot dictator in the White House. The bad news is that sometimes things have to get really ugly before people wake up and make change. The good news is things are already that bad. There are some good openings right now to connect large groups of rebellious people who want to forge a better future. And many of the speakers tonight are talking about some of those rebellions. I want to tell you about one small hopeful effort that I've witnessed that I think could have real significance. Since I got back from Mexico, I've been spending some time up in western Wisconsin around the town of Alma, which means soul in Spanish, where there are a lot of people who are living in fear and really struggling. Some of these people are dairy farmers who are enduring one of the worst years for family farms in recent memory, as Sarah Lloyd could tell you in excruciating detail. Another group is the undocumented Mexican immigrants who are the backbone of our dairy industry. They do, by some estimates, 80% of the work on Wisconsin dairy farms. Since 2007, these folks can't get driver's licenses, thanks to our Republican legislature. They're the targets of profiling by local cops and racial harassment at the gas station and the grocery store, and they're living in fear of being separated from their children when they're deported. Recently, however, I've gotten to know a wonderful Spanish teacher in the Alma School, now retired, Sean Duval, who has helped foster a deep sense of mutual understanding and connection between the dairy farmers in the area and the undocumented Mexican workers who labor on the farms. And this is how that happened. In the late 90s, the University Extension Ag School called Sean Duval and asked her if she would teach a Spanish class to some dairy farmers. Mexican immigrant labor was just beginning to arrive in western Wisconsin, and in Trumbull County, there was an explosion of the Latino population. From 2000 to 2010, it went up by 595%. So it was a major event in the late 90s. And so these old dairy hands came to Sean's classroom and sat around struggling to learn Spanish. And it didn't take her long to figure out that they needed more than that. So she started driving around to about 30 farms in the area and serving as an interpreter and a sort of ambassador of cultural understanding. And then she got the crazy idea of taking the farmers down to Mexico to meet their workers' families. And Sean has now led 15 delegations of dairy farmers to Veracruz to get to know the people who send up their family members to milk the cows. And it's made a deep impression on these farmers. One dairy farmer I talked to, Chris Weisenbeck, told me, "These guys who travel halfway across the world to work, I have so much respect for them. I don't know that I could do it." Traveling to Mexico helps cement that relationship. The same farmer, Weisenbeck, said, "They have the same family structure I have. You go there and you meet their grandpas and their grandmas and their aunts." So Weisenbeck takes exception to the insults that Donald Trump has heaped on Mexicans. He says, "How can he say these people are terrible people? They are the salt of the earth. They're like you and me." So I had to ask him, "Who did you vote for in 2016? And like a lot of his neighbors, he told me he voted for Donald Trump. Weisenbeck was an Obama-Trump voter. His big issue was NAFTA. He didn't trust Hillary Clinton. He liked what Trump had to say about bringing back the U.S. economy, and he thought there could be a better deal for farmers. So far, that has not worked out. 2018 has been the worst year in recent memory for dairy farms in Wisconsin. Mexico, one of Wisconsin's biggest cheese export markets, slapped retaliatory tariffs on the United States after Trump's tariffs that meant a loss this summer of 20% of milk income for Wisconsin farms. We are now number one in the United States for farm bankruptcies. We've lost more than 500 dairy farms in 2017, and by last month, another 429 farms had quit milking cows. More and more, it looks like the little guys, and by the little guys, I mean both the small family farms and the Mexican workers who are laboring so hard and being treated so poorly here in Wisconsin, clearly have something in common. And here, I think, is an opening for a new kind of politics. There's been a lot of talk about how Wisconsin became a red state and helped elect Donald Trump after Walker and his allies turned people against each other here with their politics of division and resentment. And there's a lot of talk about the anger of rural white voters and how Trump connected with people by scapegoating immigrants. But there is also potentially an opportunity for people who are suffering from being run over by the same greedy interests to pull together and see what they have in common. Mexican workers and U.S. dairy farmers, for example. It means overcoming a big cultural divide, which is what is so impressive and moving about what Sean Duvall has accomplished in Alma, Wisconsin. Another key ingredient is for people to recognize some things about what we really want out of life, what kind of a world we want to live in. I got a glimpse of that in Mexico, and so did the dairy farmers I've talked to. You don't really realize until you get out of your own culture how many things about our lives we take for granted. Consumerism, road rage, the idea that being busy all the time is a marker of success, or that we don't really have time to stop and talk to our neighbors. All of that is different in Mexico. As dairy farmer Nora Lindstrom put it, I realized going to Mexico that you can get by with a lot less. There's a strong sense of community in the little villages of Veracruz and Oaxaca that reminded the farmers who visited of what life was like in Wisconsin 50 years ago. As Weisenbeck put it, it's about neighbors helping neighbors and everybody working together. Small town USA, small town Mexico, same thing. My family noticed that too. People say hello to each other, they shoot the breeze, they aren't in a rush. People spend a lot more time with their families, and they have a lot of parties. That's one thing both the farmers and the Mexican workers I've talked to in Wisconsin always point out, how many parties there are in Mexico. Big multi-generational affairs, fireworks and music and dancing, and everyone bringing food and spending time together. Here it's all about work, one Mexican dairy hand told me. We Americans are obsessed with work and productivity. And to what end? We're producing our lives away. Dairy farmers in Wisconsin are producing themselves right off the farm. The rest of us are on a frantic treadmill with productivity increasing and wages flatlining. We're losing track of why we're running so hard, and we're just scrambling to keep up. When I was in Oaxaca, I met a wonderful economist named Luis Matias Rey, who grew up in a tiny Zapotec-speaking village. He didn't learn Spanish until he went to school. In the village where he lived, like a lot of indigenous villages in Oaxaca, there was communal land ownership and a cooperative way of life. It's beautiful, and it's kind of the opposite of the competitive capitalist model. After he left his village and became the first member of his family to go to college and then to grad school, Luis met a U.S. economist who'd been doing research in the villages of Oaxaca and was eager to talk to him. This economist told Luis he'd interviewed a Oaxacan shopkeeper, and he asked him, "What are your dreams for your business?" And the shopkeeper looked at him blankly. And he said, "Do you want to grow? Do you want to own two shops? Do you want to have the biggest shop in town?" The shop owner looked at him like he was crazy. He didn't have any of those dreams. He liked to close up early and have coffee with his neighbors, he said. People in the community wouldn't like it if he got too big. They'd think he was greedy. The shop was fine. It was good enough. He wanted to spend time with his friends and his family. This U.S. economist told Luis he had discovered the root cause of poverty in Oaxaca, the fundamental lack of ambition in the people. So Luis turns this critique on his head. Other countries should think about a more modest, sustainable model of economic life that allows people to live happily, he says. He calls this model the economics of human dignity, and he's written a book by that name, which you can find online. He tells this anecdote to illustrate a point about the Western economic idea of perpetual growth and how silly it is. In fact, happiness should be a chief value in economics, Luis says. We Americans talk about the pursuit of happiness, but in reality, it seems to be all pursuit. When do we get to the part where we're happy? The farmers in Western Wisconsin sure see that. They talk nostalgically about a simpler, smaller farm way of life and about having time to enjoy things. And in that, they're in the same boat as their Mexican workers who have it even tougher. Thousands of subsistence farmers in Mexico were forced off their land after NAFTA when cheap U.S. corn flooded their market. And corn is our primary export market for Wisconsin corn is Mexico, which is incredible. It's the corn originated there. Now, a lot of unemployed Mexicans are making this long, dangerous journey to another country where they work around the clock for years at a time to earn enough money to go back home and build a house and contribute to the big village festival and finally start living. we're all in the same boat, in a way, that's becoming clearer and clearer. And once people realize that, you've got fertile ground for social and political revolution. So let's get it going. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.